It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Oh, we're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, Butler Schaefer, a law professor, Southern California man. He is not afraid either. He's not afraid of even anarchy. Anarchy in the USA, in the streets. Are we better off, Butler Schaefer, with some anarchy or the government regime we got now? He's not on. No, they're going to try him again. Dang it. Butler Schaefer. I want to make sure he was on. You know, Butler Schaefer, we're working on getting him on right now. He is a law professor in Southern California, and he is the mentor of Mark J. Victor, my partner on the Freedom Summit. He's a criminal defense attorney here. And all our Freedom Summits, Butler's always a featured speaker. You know, come on down. And if you go to lewrockwell.com, you'll see gazillions, hundreds of articles that he's written over the years. How many we got here? A lot. Okay, dozens and dozens of maybe triple digits. And he is author of several books. And his main thing is he's going, look, you know, chaos is life. I mean, that's how you find solutions. You know, that's the whole point. You know, this is what happens when you have a society that's allowed to be free. Okay, you know, crazy stuff happens. Crazy good stuff. The bad stuff, you know, you're more free to fix. You know, you have more opportunity to avoid. You don't have it institutionalized by somebody with a shiny badge and a gun saying you have to or you can't. So this whole concept, oh, you're for chaos. Oh, you anarchist. Compared to what? I mean, you know, his latest article, The Sociopathic Dance of Politics, Butler Schaefer on the Heart of the Regime. I mean, you know, he has great stuff, and we feature him a lot on Freedom's Phoenix because it's so true. You know, This is something that I want to make sure. Hopefully we'll get, but I'm sure we will. We'll get them on. But the one thing that I want to make sure that you understand, you're going to be exposed to a whole different concept, a whole different perspective, a whole different way of looking at reality. Because what is reality? I mean, you know, there's an argument that, you know, perception is reality. Well, when you're dealing with human beings, like I was a restaurant manager, and that's how I train, you know, my managers, employees. I go, look, you know, a customer, their perception, that's their reality, man. Yeah, but that's not really, it don't matter. That's their reality. You know, they perceived you did, you know, then that's what happened in their head. And guess who counts? Them, right up until they don't. They're a real butthead. I go, you know what? If you never graced my establishment ever again, I'm good. Don't push me too far because I'm just like, hey, you know, but I like your money right up until it's not worth it. But the thing is that perception is reality. Does that always apply? Well, not in Butler Schaefer's mind. You know, it's like, that's a good discussion to have with them because you know, a lot of the objectivists, you know, the Ayn Rand types, you know, the hardcore libertarian people that, you know, A is A. Reality is whatever it is. It is what it is. You can do whatever you want. It is what you're what it is. You know, Butler always says, he goes, yeah, in your opinion. So this is going to be an interesting conversation. We'll get him on here when we come back. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, and Butler Schaefer, good friend and mentor of many. You know, he's been around for a long, 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 long time. Well, he's not that old, but he's certainly young of mind. But it's easy to call. You know, I want to ask you, Butler, you're a constitutional law professor and self-proclaimed anarchist. Reconcile those for me.
Well, that's an interesting. I teach constitutional law. That doesn't mean that you have to, accept what the system has been created for. It's kind of like doctors who study cancer. You know, they're not in favor of it, but you've got to understand it. You have to know what the
A good way to put it. Doctors studying cancer, a law professor studying government. I mean, there are a lot of parallels. You know, well, the cancer on society is, I mean, is it government? I mean, seriously, is there such a thing as good government? Can those two words go together?
Not in the political context. No, when you consider that government, by definition, is an entity that enjoys a monopoly on the use of violence, then you have to ask yourself, is violence, is setting up a system of violence ever worthwhile? Does it ever accomplish anything?
Well, for the audience to know that maybe they have a child that they're willing to pay for a law degree and they want to either make sure they get you as their professor or make sure they don't, can you share where you work at?
Yeah, I teach at Southwestern University Law School in Los Angeles in the Mid-Wilshire area of Los Angeles.
Well, what's the faculty's perspective of you? How's the school look at you? Butler Schaefer, very well known in the Freedom community. You're a prolific writer. You have many books, and we'll get into those in a little bit. But, I mean, what's their perspective of you?
Well, I'm tolerated. There are few people there, emphasis on the word few, who I think really enjoy having me around. But I think the others are kind of, it's kind of like the way people on the political right, and or at least many people on the political right, and everybody on the political left treats Ron Paul. You know, let's not talk about him because
he's
kind of principled integrity going on there. Let's talk about Sarah Palin. You know, somebody who's really doesn't have that much to offer in the way of philosophic soundness.
Well,
and that's kind of what I'm putting up with there at the school. You know, that's the old saying. You know, I can lighten a room by just leaving it.
One thing I wanted to share with the audience is in the love-illusion of the last few years, the fact that I even knew who you were was such a, you know, it just notched me up another couple of notches on the coolness factor with the young college students. They read your stuff all the time. They're like, wow, Butler's coming to the Freedom Summit. But you know Butler Schaefer? Oh, my goodness. And I'm going, holy cow, man. I mean, it's like, are you a rock star or something with these guys? I mean, have you experienced that? Have you seen these young people come where you're speaking and they're excited?
A few of them. I was at a conference down in Georgia at Jekyll Island a few weeks ago. on the Fed, there are an awful lot of young people there. And the one thing that's very encouraging about all of this is that it's young people that are driving it. It's not the old World War II vet age geezers with their USS Missouri baseball caps on.
Right.
Young kids, they're 20 in their 20s and 30s. I spoke at a conference in Las Vegas a couple years ago. Entirely made up of economists, and I would say of the approximately 400 people that were there, at least 80% of them were under the age of 40, and I find that encouraging. But when I was down there at Georgia, there was a lot of young people there, and they had their own little meeting, and so I went over and just sat in on it because I was just kind of curious to hear what the kids had to say, and I had so many of them that were just so impressed that somebody would take them seriously, you know, that they weren't just window dressing and so forth, but you know, people wanted to hear what they had to say.
Well, you know, your perspective on history and the freedom movement, I mean, you know, you're someone that, you know, hung out with some of the great minds. You are one of the great minds. You just outlived them.
By my own admission, Ernie.
Yeah, it's in your bio. You know, the one thing that I wanted to make sure the audience knew is that, I mean, you palled around with the boys, you know, Lefebvre and Ayn Rand
I wasn't a friend of Rand. I've read a lot of her works, but I never met her. But I knew the others, you know, Rothbard and Lefebvre. And, of course, I worked with Lefebvre out in Colorado for a couple of years. So.
Well, you're certainly in the Ayn Rand era. I mean, you know, this was a lot of influence on, you know, back when you're – I would imagine you were young back then. And
and what's interesting is that this came up at a time when I first got interested in all this stuff, was at a time when nobody could really know what it was we were. You know, there's a lot of time spent on what do we call ourselves, you know, and are we conservatives? Are we individualists? Are we this? Are we that? Are we whatever? And I always thought it was kind of irrelevant to stick a label on it, because then people judge you by the label rather than getting into the content.
They
of it,
changed so. The definition all the time anyway, so, you know.
Yeah.
But what did you guys call yourselves? I mean, what did it wind up being known as?
Well, what we ended up being known as is something different than what we called ourselves. You know, we got called all kinds of different things. I think the word libertarian came up probably as the subtle phrase. I was talking to Rothbard one time, and he was right on this. There was a time in the early 60s when all of the libertarians in this country knew each other, at least by name. They may not have met each other, but they knew each other by name. You could say, you know, I'm going to drive down to Phoenix. You are? So we'll say hello to Joe Schlock. Who's that? And he said, he's our libertarian in Phoenix. We've got a libertarian in Phoenix? Good heavens, what is this world coming to? But Rothbard had said that at this particular time, all of the libertarians in the country could have met in his apartment in New York. He had a small apartment in New York. And he was right. He was really right.
Well, now we have, I mean, you know, I don't want to dwell on this too much. We can spend, you know, what we got left in this segment, a couple of minutes. But, you know, the Libertarian Party itself, I mean, was there ever a time that it was really what you'd consider libertarian before it got into political? Or did that happen immediately? Or was there?
I think it's the other way around. I think the ideas were there. And then a lot of people became kind of enthused about the ideas. Next step is, what do we do about it? And so a lot of people wanted to go off and talk about starting a political party. I didn't. I was never involved in that phase of things. And most of the serious libertarians that I knew were not either. They saw that this is just another gang of people trying to gain power, and it's power that's the problem. It's not who it is.
You know, that's one thing that I focus on a lot of times. You know, I give a word picture that libertarians are the hobbits. We don't want to wear the ring of power. We just want to chuck it in the fires of Mordor. And a lot of people, mm-hmm. that they'll go, okay, they kind of identify with that, because that, you know, 8 hours of three-part movie, it's all about, you know, it's not who wears the ring, it's the freaking ring.
Yeah, exactly. My wife and I went to see Wagner's opera. I popularize it as the Twilight of the Gods. I can never pronounce the correct name of it. But that's the same theme there. You know, how do you get rid of this ring? You know, the people who want the ring, which is essentially a ring of power, so forth, how do you get rid of it?
Well, how do you think? I mean, does it start in our heads? Is there something physical? Is there a chant? Is there a flag? Is there a book to read? I know you do a lot of work in this area. Is it, you know, I think it is, you know, the distilled it down into one thing. I think this herding mentality, government, we need to have somebody take care of, the kind of thing, is easily accessed in the human mind with fear. If they can make
exactly.
you afraid.
Fear, and also, I mean, this is something I got into in my first book, Calculated Chaos, how we identify ourselves with institutions outside ourselves, you know, governments, organized religions, corporations, schools,
sports teams,
ideologies, ways of thinking, and so forth. We identify ourselves through such institutions we attach ourselves to them, and suddenly the organization, which at one time had simply been a convenient tool for accomplishing what we wanted to accomplish, now becomes an end in itself, and now we're supposed to sacrifice for the good of the institution. And, of course, the way in which you do that, as you pointed out, is fear is one way. You know, if we don't organize and give all this authority to the tribal chief, the people who paint themselves blue in the forest, who live on the other side of the hill, are going to come over and beat us up. And away we go.
You know, when we come back, we're going to get into some details on how you would apply a chaos anarchist attitude towards, just about anything. We'll play. We'll play and see what we can come up with from Butler Schaefer. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive till love is found. Now ask yourself,
where is the love? Where is the love?
Oh, the love's right here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and Butler Schaefer. He's a loving kind of individual with a loving wife, loving daughters, loving family. It's all about the love with Butler Schaefer. Is that where we're going to get our power? I mean, you know, where is the solution going to come from? Are we going to vote it in? How are we going to do it?
No, I think the whole system's just going to come down on its own lack of merits, kind of much the same way that the Soviet Union did. These large, centralized, vertically structured organizations just don't work very well, and you're seeing this going on throughout the world right now. You know, the world becoming very decentralized. One of the more encouraging things that's been going on in a number of cities in Europe in recent years has been the elimination of all street signs, all traffic signs. No speed limits, no stop lights, no stop signs, no cops hiding behind the bushes.
But what about the roads?
Right. And what's interesting about that is that the cities that have done this have experienced two things of importance. One, the number of accidents that occur has dropped by at least a half in most of these cities. And secondly, and more importantly, is that it has generated a greater degree of social cohesion, if you want to put it in those terms.
People say communication between the driver and the pedestrian.
Instead of just reacting to a machine.
Yep.
And it really works. And, of course, the political structure wouldn't really care for that in most communities, but you're seeing some of it in this country. Secession movements are going on, and you see the political establishment really in a state of desperation. That's the only way I can put it. Now, it used to be that the politically structured people, you know, 40, 50 years ago, were kind of fun to be around. You could argue with them. They had some point of view, and you could take on their point of view. Now they've just resorted to name-calling.
You know, this is one thing that I've seen happen is that the American people, there was a YouTube I was watching, a guy, he made the point, he was saying that the more freedom that you give a people, a country, a culture, or whatever, the more you create the capacity for an enormous explosion in economic activity and money and wealth, which provides for a greater opportunity for the collectivists to take and feed off and create big government. Without freedom, you don't have the economic engine that will support big government. So you get this big, giant government that then kills the golden goose. And it's kind of like right now, I can see it happening. It's like sharks feeding on a dead whale. I mean, at first, you know, there's a frenzy going on, but everybody's got enough, and you get down to the last meat on the backbone, and it gets very competitive, and they're going to go until there's nothing left and fighting amongst themselves, and that's what they're doing to the American economy. They're just...
Go ahead.
I mean, my point.
I think this is the area where people have to become very much aware of what's implicit in even the simplest program. You know, governments always start off with these very simple programs. We're just going to start off with a 1% tax on something. I remember when I was in law school and studying taxation, we got back into some of the congressional hearings, and some of the people there in Congress were saying that, the original tax proposal was that there would be a 1% tax on all income over $10,000. Of course, $10,000 back in that time period, you know, almost a century ago, that was a lot of money. And a 1% tax on it didn't sound like it was terribly much to some people. But a few people saw what was implicit in that. They said, if it can be 1%, the day may come when it'll actually get up to 10%. And the proponents of the tax accused the opponents of it. If we ever got to the place where people were taxed 10% of their income, there would be a civil war in this country. Well, I saw something on one of these, I think it was a C-SPAN channel over the weekend, a suggestion that if this value-added tax, a federal sales tax, goes into effect, that all the income people make, about 75% of it at the state and federal level is going to be siphoned off by government. 75%.
Because every level of everything gets taxed, and they just keep changing it. And then when they say, "Oh, we'll replace all this other stuff," you know, well, how high does the national sales tax got to be to replace all the other stuff? And then in every country where they've ever done a value-added tax or a national sales tax to replace the income tax, they wound up with both anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 These people don't.
So, do you see it surviving?
Imitation, other than what is presented to them by the rest of us. You know, if we say just no, we're just not going to do it.
Well, is the government going to survive? I mean, is it going to survive?
I hope not. I hope.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk about the prospects for government's survival, and if it is going to survive, in what form, and if it is going to survive, Are we glad it did, or do we wish it didn't? And if it didn't, what would happen? I don't know. You go crazy thinking about it, but it is entertaining.
What's going to happen with it?
Yeah. Well, we know what's going to happen with it, so good conversation with Brett Beck.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah, we're back in the saddle again here in Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my good buddy, Butler Schaefer, taking away the fear. Everybody's all afeared of what's going to happen if we don't have government take care of us. If we did away with the nanny state, would we be better off? I mean, what are we looking at? You anarchist as compared to what we got now? I vote anarchy in the USA. You know, is that our option? I mean, we just need to just cut and run? I mean, what are we looking for here, Butler?
Well, I think it's a matter of just getting our own lives, our own work systems and so forth in order where we're controlling it ourselves. You know, you had a commercial on at the start of this segment from Life Alert, and their slogan, you know, "Help, I've fallen and I can't get up." And I thought, what an appropriate way of describing Western civilization. You know, isn't that the situation that we're now in terms of civilization? It's fallen and they can't get up. You know, they've tried all of the methods. They're going to try and keep taxing us, which is kind of hard to do without getting resentment. And so they turn to inflation, which is just another form of taxation, but it doesn't appear as obvious. And then talk about, well, let's bring federal troops in, let's militarize the whole country in order to keep everybody in order. And they've lost it. You know, our organ. organized society has simply lost whatever support the American people once had for it.
Well, organized society. I mean, is there such a thing? I mean, how? I mean, you're Mr. Chaos. Can you really have that much control on everything and expect to maintain it? I mean, that's kind of what the Romans learned. You know, conquer is easy. Control is not. You know, we even have China right now. China, of all places, is doing a $4 trillion or one stimulus package. It's $586 billion of China doing stimulus, you know, dumping in. I'm going, this can't be good, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people, as I was saying earlier, I think people have to pay very close attention to the distinction between, say, an organization that is something that you control and an institution. And it's kind of like a, you know, some social group that you're a member of. You're going to have a camping trip or something like that. You know, you wouldn't think of organizing a group for a camping trip and then giving someone in that group the authority to use force and violence and so forth to compel people to behave. You and a bunch of friends want to go out to dinner, and there's some question as to where you're going to go for dinner, and you pull out the gun and say, we're going to go have Italian or whatever it may be. You aren't going to have friends very long. If people employed that kind of violence in the workplace, they'd be out of work. They'd be fired in 2 minutes.
You know, what's the alternative, though? I mean, I give you an example. You know, you talk about declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. I call this show Declare Your Independence because I'm big declare your independence kind of guy. Because in there, it didn't define what kind of government. It just said how you recognize a bad one. When they're not defending individual rights, it's your right, duty, alter, abolish. So I'm going, okay. That pretty much sums up what we need to do here. But is there any kind of government or collective or kind of you can imagine that we should strive for, or should we just strive to not have any? I mean, you know, how do you?
We're social creatures. I mean, you know, if it were not for social organization, none of us would have survived. If our mothers had simply dropped us on the side of the road, you know, right after we'd been born, the human race wouldn't even be here. So we require social organization. Not just biologically, we require it economically through the notion of division of labor. You know, we've discovered that we can enhance our material well-being by working with other people. We require social organization just to maintain our sanity. You know, you get people who have isolated themselves in, what do they call them? Deprivation tanks, sensory deprivation tanks back in the 60s and the 70s were kind of popular. Put people inside these tanks and just close off all outward contact with anything. And suddenly these people are hallucinating and they're kind of going crazy. And this is part of NASA's efforts to find out, you know, if we're going to send somebody out to some distant planet and so forth, and they're going to be away for many, many months just traveling, what's going to happen to them? How will this affect their minds? So we need social organization. The question is, does a social organization have to depend upon violence? Number somebody with a gun, somebody with a big muscle or something like that, or can it depend upon contract?
Well, you know, that's one thing. I remember a quote, I think it was Ayn Rand, is something like, you only have a right to the property you can keep. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Define that. Explain that. What were they talking about?
Well, in a way, I think that you get to the question of where do notions of, quote, rights come from? I've never been comfortable with the idea of rights because you always get back to the question, okay, so where does that come from? You and I enter into a contract. By contract, we create rights in each other. And in that sense, in that setting, it makes sense. But in some other setting, you know, as the cannibals are pushing me deeper into the pot, and I yell out, you know, I have a right not to be eaten or something like that. What does that mean in that kind of a setting? I think the only rights that we have, let's say with respect to our life, with respect to our other property interests, is what our neighbors are willing to respect. We really depend upon the respect of our neighbors for, you know, what is ours. And it's a mutual thing. If I don't respect your right to be left alone, then are you going to respect my claim to be left alone?
It's a cultural war. It is a revolution between the ears.
It's always been that. And
well, you know what my optimism comes from, Butler? I'll tell you this. The fact that it takes trillions, literally trillions of dollars by the collective man in order to spread the propaganda through the corporate media, from the government funded schools, the social and economic engineering of, you know, every level, every agency of government at every level, that it takes that trillions of dollars, tens of trillions, hundreds of trillions of dollars in order to turn.
In other words, a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. A lot of money. I mean, a lot of money over decades that they need that in order to suppress humanity, to get them to do what they want. The fact that it takes that much resources to control us and put us in this box and to make us afraid and dependent and all the things that they accomplish with that, I'm going, if it takes that much, what happens when they run out of the money? What happens when they run out of that tool? What happens? You know, do we just become free by default?
We run out of a willingness to be suppressed.
Or the ability to be suppressed. I mean, it takes money. It takes convincing us to turn it over. We have half of the people in this country aren't paying taxes now. I mean, you know, at what point is there a tipping point? When does that happen? You have signed billboards here in Phoenix, Arizona right now, Maricopa County Treasurer's Department, big seal up there, and it says, and all it says, black on yellow, big giant sign, and all it says is, if you own property, you owe taxes. And I go, you know what? We took and put that up on Freedom's Phoenix, and I took the Maricopa County seal off and put Freedom's Phoenix up there. Heck, I would have paid for them to put that up.
Yeah. I saw two quotations on the news about a week or so ago. They were unrelated in terms of how they were presented, but one of them said that they're 47% of Americans don't pay any taxes. I don't know whether that's accurate or not, but just take it for what it's saying. 47% of Americans don't pay taxes. The other one was a public opinion poll that showed that 45% of Americans thought that the tax level for them was just about right.
Yeah, none.
Put those together. Yeah, I'm not being taxed. I think the tax is about right. You know, but what I find most interesting is that, as I was saying earlier, you know, people, the statists used to be fun to play around with, and they're not anymore. They've run out of all kinds of arguments. You know, Keynesianism has now been done in by, and socialism generally as an economic system, has been done in by Austrian economics. And now we had the Soviet Union, you know, sort of a boogeyman that was going to go out and destroy the whole world if we don't do something about it right away. And it's gone away. So now, what do we have as a means, or what does the state have as a means for trying to hold us together?
A club.
It becomes desperate. Global warming. Global warming. And now, you know, you've got people talking seriously otherwise intelligently run talk shows about whether or not global warming caused this volcano in Iceland. Well, I know something about geology. I've studied it, and it was a hobby of mine when I was a kid and so forth. Anyone who's going to try and talk you straight in the face and tell you that global warming causes volcanoes, you're dealing with a nitwit. Same thing is happening with some Muslim clerics who are saying that, no, these earthquakes and volcanoes are being caused by scantily clad women. You know, they're exposing too much. This is the same kind of argument that was made by some of the right-wing Christian religion leaders who are trying to blame the flooding in New Orleans following the hurricane down there, trying to blame that on homosexuality and the ACLU and so forth. It's just these people, absolutely desperate souls that are reaching out. One thing that's encouraging, I really enjoyed this, there was this a story on the news yesterday about some women students at Purdue University who jumped on this notion that earthquakes and volcanoes are caused by scantily clad women. So they had a lot of very busty women that decided to have what they called a boob quake to try to join together and cause some kind of earthquake activity by virtue of being kind of scantily clad in their appearance there. But it's people are laughing at this stuff now, and that's encouraging. It kind of takes me back to the old classic quotation of Gandhi. You know, he said, you know, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they fight you, and then you win. And we're at the point where it's now sort of a fight with these people, except it's not a fight on anything of any substance. It's just name-calling.
Well, what is the substance, though? I mean, you're looking at society now. It's always been, you know, I mean, a lot of people could easily make the argument. It always comes down to economics. I mean, you know, but is there...
More than that.
What is it?
I think it comes down also to a sense of what I, lack of a better term, call spirituality. And I don't mean that in just the religious sense, although I think the religious sense includes that, but I think a need for something that goes beyond simply the material. Institutions, particularly governments and corporations, live on the material. They live on linear kinds of processes. They live on mechanistic ways of doing things. Human beings are just resources. You even see people's jobs described that way. Well, I'm the human resources manager here at United Updike. Well, what does that mean? A human resource? Are you a resource? A resource for what? Resource means something other people employ to accomplish their ends. Who are these other people? And I think there's an effort here that I shouldn't say an effort. I think so much of what's bringing this stuff into disrepute and what's going to bring it down ultimately has nothing to do with ideas. I think the ideas help, but I think that the whole life process has just had it with this kind of nonsense.
You know, I'll give you a ray of hope. What I saw. I was one of the main speakers at the Liberty Forum for the Free State Project. And they had it, I don't know, a month or so ago, and Judge Napolitano was there and Bumper Hornberger and so on. And what I saw, you know, my kind of speech was on the reconciliation between the libertarian free stater guys that wanted people to come there to take over political power and the anarchists and the anarchist types that were like, hey, I came here just to be left alone. And the first people bugging me, telling them I'm not doing it right is you guys, you know? So that
struck me as so funny. I was up in New Hampshire when you're for a presentation up there at one of these groups, conferences. And I was arguing with some of these people. Said, why in the devil would you want to all get together in one location? It's kind of like creating your own concentration camp. You know, you put a big fence around New Hampshire and have all libertarian-oriented people living there. You know, what would the state want? What would the state need more than that? You know, you've already brought yourself together in some collective fashion. I find, you know, you go back. It goes back to a question you asked me at the outset about how people respond to me at the law school. It, you know, it doesn't take, you know, 51% majority of anything to accomplish things. I'll think of his name in a moment. Once said that you know, every decent university requires at least one crazy person on the faculty, and that's all you need. You know, you don't need a university campus with, you know, 187 Austrian or anarchist or libertarian faculty members.
Well, this is what's happened. That's what I wanted to share with you. I mean, these young kids are coming just to be, hey, man, I just came here to, you know, learn how to raise chickens. You know, I didn't want to, you know, screw politicians, man. Am I required to, you know, be in your little war to wear the ring or get behind a lever of power when I came here just to be left alone? So that attitude I saw a lot of, especially when you have the young people that are graduating that don't have any job prospects. It's easy for them to make the decision that they're just going to, you know what, I'm just going to, you know, learn to be happy. I'm just going to learn to be left alone.
Yeah, yeah. Self-directed, to live for your own sake and to do all this other stuff. I mean, what do you know about your job prospects or career prospects when you're 18 or 19 years old? My God, you know, this is where hopefully you would go to school to get some ideas, you know, to start exploring alternative not only ideas, alternative ways of living, alternative approaches to life, that you don't know where it's going to end up in terms of the work that you might do. That's what college should be, and now it's just been turned into, you know, like trade school stuff.
Well, when we come back here on Declare Your Independence, we're going to get Butler to tell us some of his predictions of the future. I've been doing that with everybody. It's your turn, man. We'll get it when we come back. When we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, they're coming. Oh, it's a goose step. It's the left jackboot, then the right jackboot, the jackboot on your throat. Organization of, and we are talking with Law Professor Butler Schaefer. Is there something we can do about it? Well, if there is, I want to know what it is. And regardless, either way, I want to know what his predictions are, what's going to happen. Yeah, I know. You say, well, I don't have a prediction. Well, you can make up one. You know, give me an idea. What's the next, as we're going in this financial collapse, which, you know, I got to get that out of you. Do you think we're going into a financial collapse?
Oh, yeah. I think fairly... fairly evident. You can figure that out either from just your basic understanding of economics or even of physics. You know, the law of motion that tells us that for every action there's an opposite and equal reaction. Well, we fed an awful lot of dangerous practices into the economy, which are going to have to be borne out. The consequences of are going to have to be borne out. You're not going to overcome those consequences with public opinion polls or people advancing the ideas that were, I think, probably implicit in a book title I saw. I haven't seen the book yet, so I can't say anything about it. But the title of the book was Obama's Zombies. And I really like the title of it. But what I saw of it, it sounded like they're referring to the people who just bought into the current politics without really thinking about it. You know, we want change and we have hope and so forth, and that's as far as we can go. We just sort of become robots.
You know, I saw that happen when we were in New Hampshire, right before the New Hampshire primary and so on, for Dr. Paul. There's largest group of people were the Ron Paul supporters with their stuff. And then right next, you know, for the cameras, you have the Obama guys, and they're, you know, about the same age. You look about kind of pretty much the same kind of people. And they're getting along fine, having fun, getting in front of each other. They're enjoying each other's company. And I saw what would happen. The Ron Paul guys, you know, you had the video camera and you're take a video, and they go up to an Obama supporter and they go, yeah, okay, well, yeah, why are you here? They start asking them questions, and they get in detail, and it was so clear the Ron Paul people had a reason. I mean, they were like, well, because of this and this and this. Obama people were like, hey, yeah, that's where the party is. You know, there's women over here. There's, you know, they had no reasoning.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting at earlier. There's no substance to what you're up against now. The only, and I don't say this just because it's, you know, a point of view I agree with. But, you know, when you get into discussions with people who understand, say, a libertarian philosophy, who understand Austrian economics, that there is a process of reasoning you can go through to begin at point X and end up with point Y. And it used to be that way even with people on the left. You know, the communists were fun to discuss things with. I took a seminar on communist theory when I was in college, undergraduate college, from a guy who is one of the world's renowned, I guess, Marxist theorists, and one of the best courses I ever took, and one of the best teachers I ever had. This guy was really good, and we used to argue all the time, but we argued in terms of matters of substance. You know, well, if you start here, what's going to happen on this? And it used to work out that way. Now it's just, well, if you disagree with Obama's policies, then you're a racist. If you don't like what Israel is doing to the Palestinians, then you're anti-Semitic. If you don't like enhanced police powers in the United States, then you're a terrorist supporter. That's as far as they can go.
Yeah, and no. Now what?
Now they're down to everything is a product of global warming.
You know, that's kind of going. I don't think they're going to survive that one. Because Al Gore came here to Phoenix and they said, oh, what sign should we make? I go, I know the sign I want. What happens when it gets cold? It's getting cold. I'm like, please.
I saw a T-shirt not too long ago that said, I survived the global warming blizzard of 2010.
Yeah. Butler, it's great to have you on. Butler Schaefer. We'll see you tomorrow.